Hey, everybody, a conversation at University of North Carolina, Charlotte, where I take questions from the audience and give a speech about what is necessary for conservatives to do. Email me your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school chapter, start a college chapter today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. And come to America Fest at amfest.com. That is amfest.com. Candace Owens, Tucker Carlson, Greg Gutfeld, Laura Ingraham, Steve Bannon, Dennis Prager, Matt Walsh, Tim Pool, and more. amfest.com. Subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast app and type in Charlie Kirk Show and subscribe in the upper right-hand corner. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Thank you. So, I want to talk about a couple things, but honestly, this is the last stop on our campus tour. It's been amazing, and we never have enough time for questions. And so I want to make sure we have a lot of time for that tonight. And many of you have kind of heard our stump speech before and you know, all that stuff, but I want to talk about one news item that I found to be super interesting that connects with some of the themes that we talk about at Turning Point USA. And then we'll do some questions and we'll have back and forth and we'll see where time leads us there. So there's one story that I found super interesting. And if you listen to our podcast or if you listen to kind of what we talk about at Turning Point USA, we have been repeating the theme that the threats to our freedoms and liberties, it's more than just what the government is doing. It's also what corporate America is doing in collusion with the federal government. Regardless of your political views, we should all be able to agree back in the 2020 election, it was wrong for the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, to go to Facebook and demand that they censor the Hunter Biden laptop story, saying that it was Russian disinformation. You might be the biggest Biden fan in the world here tonight, by the way. Welcome. And I got to ask you, how's that going? But welcome. Thank you for being here tonight. We appreciate that. But that's wrong. You should not be able to use the force of government or the threat of force of government to go to a private actor and be able to suppress stories that could impact an election. It's not sustainable. It's wrong. It'd be wrong if a conservative did it. It's wrong if a liberal does it. Now, one of the places where censorship has just reigned supreme over the last couple of years has been on Twitter. Now, I have a Twitter account still. Thankfully, I'm one of the survivors, despite many people that have anyone been banned on Twitter here? Raise your hand. Okay, well, you might be liberated soon. We'll talk about that in just a second. So, but Twitter is not the biggest social media platform, but I think people misunderstand Twitter. Twitter is an incubator of elite opinion. So people that write columns, people that host podcasts, people that are on television, they go to Twitter to see what the smart kids are thinking, to have consensus, and then they put it kind of through their communication channels. So said differently, Twitter is not about the amount of people consuming information, it's who is consuming the information. Now, Twitter has by far, maybe TikTok more so, but TikTok is pandering to a different generation, but that's a separate issue. Twitter has been the worst when it comes to speech of any private actor the last couple of years. For example, suppressing the Hunter Biden laptop story, kicking people off for having heterodox opinions of where the virus came from, which, by the way, the virus did come from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, not from some wet market where they said originally. And you could get kicked off Twitter for saying that originally, which now actually is factual and true. And so Twitter has been a blunt force object of a censorship regime. Now, this is really important because there's a lot of people in our government that would love to be able to shut up dissenting voices. By the way, not just conservative dissenting voices, but liberal dissenting voices as well. By the way, I can't wait to meet anti-war liberals again one day. I don't know where you all went. All of a sudden, all the anti-war liberals are like, we need to send money to Ukraine. Like, okay, I would love to have you guys come back and be honest because the left actually used to be anti-war. Now they're super on board for war all the time or else you're a Putin puppet. Like, okay, great. Because every single member of the American left is totally on board with the further escalation of this proxy war in Ukraine, $75 billion being spent in Ukraine. I don't know. I think we should secure our own border before we send another dollar to Ukraine. Like, what a concept, right? It's outrageous. Okay, so it doesn't matter where you come from. If you have a heterodox opinion, you have a contrarian opinion, you have to admit there might be someone who wants to shut you up at some point, okay? Freedom of speech is a value. Freedom of speech is not a means to the end. Freedom of speech is something that is important for dissension, for dialogue. Also, it de-radicalizes your politics, okay? Tonight, we're going to have hopefully some people that disagree. Hopefully, you'll see something from their perspective. You'll see something from my perspective. You guys can be the judge of who the better idea is. But if I had a speech here tonight and I said, I only want to hear from people that I agree, what would you have? Twitter. So tonight, we're actually going to have freedom of speech. And actually, it's more fun to have freedom of speech, right? You could see who comes more prepared, who has the better, what, you get the point, right? Now, Twitter has lived under this regime of censorship. I got kicked off Twitter momentarily for a little period of time because I deadnamed somebody, a phenomenon I was not even familiar with, because I used the wrong name of a person that used to exist, of the man who thinks he's a woman that runs the rear admiral for the United States Navy, Levine. Yeah, Levine. So I used the wrong gender pronoun, so I got kicked off Twitter. Anyway, that's kind of what happens on Twitter, right? And so the suppression was so bad is that somebody really started to pay attention to this. And the somebody who started to pay attention to this is someone that is a direct threat to the regime. Now, I don't agree with everything this person has ever done. You shouldn't have to, but it's a very interesting story, okay? Regardless of your politics, it's one of the most fascinating news stories of 2022 that I think the media is getting totally wrong because the media is very dishonest, which is the world's richest man, and it fluctuates based on stock prices, decided to just go purchase Twitter to go liberate it from the censorship regime. Now, I don't even think he was totally serious at one point. Who knows? Who knows his motives or his intentions, right? So Elon tweets, of course, that I'm going to buy Twitter, and everyone thinks he's joking, right? And then he goes in and buys something like $10 billion worth of shares. And his whole idea is like, I want to liberate Twitter. I want to make fun again. I want the internet to be a place of speech and discussion and discourse. The people that are policing speech right now on Twitter, it's making it very unhealthy for our country. And that if you want to be able to participate and speak freely online, Twitter should be a place for that. And it just got announced today, starting Friday, Elon Musk is going to have the keys to Twitter, which is remarkable when you think about it. Now, if that bothers you, I'd love to hear why, right? I don't know the counter argument. Like, oh, they're going to use it for his own billionaire oligarchic purposes. You're trying to tell me that Twitter's not being used for billionaire oligarchy right now? Like, right now it's being used for every one of the pet projects of the World Economic Forum, open borders, like every single one of the pet projects of the billionaire elite, trends on Twitter, even though 500 people are tweeting about it. No, I actually think Elon Musk is very interesting where he just doesn't care what people say about him. He is a visionary and a pioneer. And it gets to this question of why is America becoming less free? There's a lot of reasons why America is becoming less free. But the one that I'm focused on that really bothers me is not that we have elites, okay? I think that utopian egalitarianism is stupid and silly. It's never going to happen, okay? People say, one day we're all going to be equal and equal stuff. That's stupid. It's never going to happen, okay? Things end up being in hierarchies, okay? In sports, in music, in class, some people work hard, some people have different gifts. It's life. It's not fair, but it's the way it is, okay? So things naturally develop in hierarchies. So the question should not be whether or not we have hierarchies. The question should be, what do the people do once they're on the top of the hierarchy, okay? This is the question of better elites, and our elites right now are awful. They're corrupt, they're stupid, they are arrogant, they're deceitful, and our elites are in tandem to try to crush all of you. They're working in harmoniously to do it, to suppress your speech, to deteriorate your currency, to keep the border wide open, to call you an insurrectionist if you wave a flag, like you're the worst thing in the world. And really, we need a restoration of an American elite population that hopefully looks at the money that they've earned or the money they've received if they inherited it, not as some sort of massive repatriation campaign to go fund global warming type stuff, but instead, how can I preserve and protect the American project? And honestly, that's what Elon Musk is doing here. It's unprecedented. It is unexpected. I mean, I did not have on my bingo card in 2022 that the world's richest man was going to buy Twitter for $44 billion under the mandate that I'm going to fire 75% of the employees and make it fun again and make it the home for a free and open internet. Now, if you are here tonight and your contention is like, oh, disinformation, all this sort of stuff. Okay, so let's pretend that disinformation was actually a huge problem. Okay, I don't think it is. Let's pretend it is. The answer is more speech. Have more people be able to then comment on it and have more people be able to make their own decisions. I trust the American people to make informed decisions a lot more than some fact checker at the New York Times that has the ability to shut up a Twitter account that they don't like. And you have to allow that process to unfold. And so, but What's also important is they say, well, Twitter shouldn't be a place of bullying. Okay, look, I don't like bullying. You shouldn't either. But when you have speech, you have to accept that there are going to be externalities that you might not like. That's called life, okay? When you have liberty, that means that you're going to have some people do things you might disagree with that you might not always like. Okay, well, it's harassment. How do you define harassment exactly? Because I get a death threat like every 5 seconds on Twitter, and none of those people ever get banned. But I wrongly label a gender of the Rear Admiral for Health, whatever title that is, and that I get suspended from Twitter instantaneously. Dr. Malone, Dr. McCullough, all these other people on Twitter have been banned as well. And so this goes to a big point, and this is, you could see the media freaking out that Elon is now going to own Twitter, and he's going to fire all these people. It's going to be splendid and wonderful. It's going to be awesome. And so, you could see the media freaking out, and you think to yourself, how important is censorship to this regime? And it's not just important, it's the whole ballgame. If you cannot shut up certain ideas or perspectives, I don't know how much longer these people will hold on to power. I really don't. Because so many of the mass movements in our country the last couple of years have been built on extraordinary lies. Not little lies, but extraordinary lies. That America is somehow systemically racist? Are you kidding me? We're the least racist country ever to exist in the history of the world. That somehow police are going around and gunning down unarmed black men in the street on a regular basis. I mean, unarmed black men in the street on a regular basis. I mean, polled Democrats think that over 1,500 unarmed black men are gunned down by police every single year. It's actually 11. Why would they think that? Because it's all built on a lie. It's not true. It's just not. We're the most decent, benevolent, generous country ever to exist in the history of the world. And we should own that. And yet the censorship is crushing debate and dialogue on that. And so it's not just that topic. It's also the topic of where did the virus come from? Or will the vaccine prevent, you know, the spread of the virus? You might have different opinions on the vaccine. Fine. You know, we can have disagreement on that. But that's a lie. It doesn't stop the spread of the virus. The Pfizer executive has now testified in front of Congress. Oh, we never even tested it, let alone we now acknowledge it doesn't stop the spread of the virus. Now, it might be a treatment. Okay, we can have that conversation, but then maybe can we weigh it up against other treatments too? Like that should have been the conversation all along. That was a total and complete lie. And so from somehow kids are going to be super spreaders in schools, that was a lie. There's no evidence at all whatsoever around that. And so you go through one after the other after the other. You have to ask yourself the question, how much of what would our society look like if Twitter would have been liberated a couple years ago? And I don't know, maybe it would have made no difference at all. I actually think it's a major deal. I actually think that our ideas are being conservative, you know, pro-freedom, pro-liberty, pro-American ideas, generally when given a chance to compete and spread, are very popular. In fact, censorship and the ability to restrict that kind of flow of information is the only thing holding that all together. That's why now the federal government, this is how corrupt these people are. Did you see this? The federal government has now come out and they have said, we now need to have Elon Musk's purchase of Twitter undergo a national security evaluation to be able to hold up the deal because this might be threatening to our national security. It's funny, they didn't do a national security evaluation when Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post. No, because they're doing everything they possibly can to slow this down. Now, somebody might say, Charlie, aren't we in a sad state of affairs that the world's richest man has to parachute in and buy a company and bail us out and liberate us? Of course we're in a sad state of affairs. We're on our last gasp. We're on the most fragile footing our republic has ever had. And I'm going to take any person willing to help us that we possibly can. And if Twitter does in fact get liberated, the next time there is a mass media campaign for whatever type of topic you want, and the Ukraine one is another great example, by the way. You've just seen public opinion shift on Ukraine almost overnight, right? Over the last 6 months, where it just started with this very, very clear, like good versus evil, when in reality, it's a lot murkier than that. And our involvement is a lot murkier than that. Where is the weapons going? What does success look like? And why are we escalating when we should be de-escalating? All these questions, right? The only way you can have a free society is if people are able to speak freely and consume information freely. And they've realized the government does not have the power yet to do that. So they use the soft power of social media to do that, where that kind of happens online. Because they control CBS, they control ABC, they control NBC, they control the networks, they control the newspapers, they control Apple News and all that. But now that there might be a sliver that might be the spark of dissenting opinion, it's actually going to be a very big threat. And by the way, it's just going to be more fun. I mean, seriously, when the creativity you get when you allow people to speak freely. Yes, you get wackadoodles out there that say all sorts of nutty stuff, but generally you get, it becomes a competition for human excellence over a period of time. And by the way, there's no other way around it. A free and open internet, the reason they must shut down the internet is that internet was relatively free and open back in 2016. And every tech executive went on apology tour basically saying, we're so sorry at Twitter and Facebook that we allowed Donald Trump to become president. Oh, you mean when people can openly speak, candidates win that you don't like? Oh, that's interesting. People can consume information that you might not totally like. It's really interesting. You know, the Hispanic community is becoming very, very conservative very quickly. It's a very positive development. We're seeing it happen all across the country. And some of the media reports about it is they're coming out and they're saying Hispanics are victims of misinformation campaigns and they don't know any better. Oh, they're too stupid to know right from wrong. So you have to be able to police the internet, you stupid racist that writes for whatever newspaper. Like, oh, they're too dumb to know what it is. Actually, I trust people to be able to process the information correctly and then make the decisions after that. And if not, you're like, I don't trust it. Then go start your own account and go grow a following and then start to tell you why you're wrong. Speech is always the answer to less speech or speech that you don't like. And that is a really exciting moment because I know a lot of people here have politics on your mind and all that. I'm actually thinking bigger picture, even outside of the election. Long term, as far as a movement that is durable, that is grassroots, that is anti-fragile, one that is going to be building long term, I think historically, we're going to look back on the year of 2022 as the reclamation and liberation of Twitter as actually one of the greatest wins for freedom and liberty this calendar year, even more so than what might happen politically a couple weeks from now. So let me say one or two other things, then we'll get to some questions. At Turning Point USA, we have chapters all across the country. We talk a lot about the woke and we talk a lot about CRT and all this. Happy to discuss that at length. We had an interesting discussion yesterday with somebody running for Congress about CRT. So what is critical race theory? Critical theory comes from originally Herbert Marcuse, came from the Frankfurt School, Michel Foucault, Jacques Derrida, implemented through a variety of decades of legal and academic theory. Derek Bell wrote Introduction to Critical Legal Theory or Critical Theory, Critical Race Theory in the early 1990s. It's very simple. You guys can use this definition anytime you want. It's called anything you don't like racist until you control it. That's critical race theory, right? That's racist. That's racist. That's racist. Give me the keys. That's racist. That's racist. That's racist. Give me the keys. And you see that happen time and time and time again. And I said this yesterday and I'll say it again. I can't stand talking about race. It drives me nuts. You know, the media, they do their typical thing like, oh yeah, Charlie's a racist. Yeah, whatever. Okay, go get a life. And by the way, that's the way you should react. That's the way you should react. It means nothing to be called that from the media. It means nothing. You know who you are. Your friends know who you are. Your parents know who you are. Make their attacks fall flat. As soon as you listen to them, you give them power. Now, if there is a racist here tonight, then you got to do something in your life. You got to get yourself organized. You got people to apologize for. You got to go repent. You got to go find a relationship, hopefully, with your creator through Jesus Christ. And by the way, racism goes both ways. You can be racist against white people. You can be racist against black people. And it's happening all the time. And it's wrong and it's evil and it's terrible. But guess what? We have a supply and demand problem with racism in America. Meaning we have an incredible demand to find racism everywhere, yet the supply is so low because we're the least racist country ever to exist in the history of the world. In fact, we're so not racist. There is a cottage industry of creating fake hate crimes. Jussie Smollett, who just creates a fake hate crime out of thin air. So for what reason? I don't quite know. Allegedly, right? Because he got convicted, but he never actually admitted to it. And so when we talk about these issues, we talk about that. I would love to kind of move past that conversation. But the broader thing, we could talk about it in question and answer, is that it's unbelievably parasitically destructive to our society to continue to focus on these racial issues. It will tear everything that we love apart. There is no like middle ground. We have to have a conversation around this stuff. I look at everybody as human beings, okay? And you should too. Now, you might say, well, Charlie, does that mean you're colorblind? Well, of course I see color. I just don't put any judgment on it. It means nothing to me. Nothing. And if it means something to you, that's more in the direction of racism than not. And people argue about like systemic structural inequity and all this stuff. And that's tribalism. You are generalizing a group of people based on melanin content and characteristics that mean nothing. They say, well, Charlie, what does matter? How about this? Your actions matter a lot. Your character matters a lot. Who you are, your soul matters a lot. Skin color is a sloppy, tribal way of organizing society. It's always evil. It's always wrong. It creates entrenched radicalism. In fact, I was talking to a reporter recently, and she said, "Wow, Charlie, I think you could agree with some people on the left." You know, she didn't quite totally understand everything I was saying, but that's fine. And she, New York Times reporter, goes with the game. So, and I said, "Yeah." She said, "But the one thing you just seem so distant on with the left is the issue of race." I said, "Yeah, why do you think that is?" I think that actually the country agrees on a lot of stuff, but they're trying to use this as a diversionary tactic to not actually talk about, I don't know, that the middle class is getting smaller, that inflation is 10%, always this over-dominating conversation on things that quite honestly can't change. And it's really interesting. If you ask a true critical race theorist, you have to say, what on earth would satisfy you to never bring up this topic again? That's the most important question. And basically, there's no salvation in sight. It has to be eternal repentance, eternal apologizing, eternal abolishing of whiteness, which, by the way, now Coca-Cola comes out and says, we have to get rid of whiteness in our company, which is just remarkable for an American company to say that. So let me kind of put a cap on that, and then we'll do some questions. All of that line of thinking will destroy the country that we love. I don't care what your political views are. I don't care what perspective you come from. If you entertain this venom or this poison even a little bit, it will take over like locusts to the very core of our constitutional republic. We have the wealthiest, most decent society ever to exist in the history of the world. Do we have problems? Of course we do. We could talk about them at length. Happy to explain it further. But we, considering the different cultures, languages, backgrounds, and races that generally coexist in our country beautifully well, you will lose that if we teach our kids all of a sudden that skin color matters. If we put some sort of platform of, oh yeah, actually how you look means something. That is a lie from the pit of hell. And I hope you guys will join me in repudiating that. Okay, let's get some questions going and we'll have some fun. Okay, so you guys can form a question line here. If you disagree, you guys are welcome to go to the front of the line. This is a generally conservative audience, right? Okay. So let me just say a couple things about this. So we love freedom of speech. We love dialogue. We love disagreement. We love all this. So thank you guys. But if there is, listen to what I'm saying. If there is a liberal that comes up and says something that you deem to be outrageous, please don't mock that person. Don't laugh at that person. It takes courage to come to a conservative event and to come and express your opinion. Let it be known for everyone watching at home and the media that will never report this down, that at every single Turning Point USA event and every event that I do, disagreement is not just welcome, it is invited, and you have a chance to allow yourself to speak freely. We will be the ambassadors of free speech. The left will be the censors. So let it be known and let them state their case. Okay?
Hello, Charlie. How are you doing this evening? My question to you is, do you believe that there's a direct link between Christianity and conservatism?
So that's a good question. So let me answer it differently first. I get the question, Charlie, can I be a conservative without being a Christian? Of course you can. Yes. You're welcome aboard as long as you believe in the natural law, liberty, and freedom. You know, you believe in our core tenets. But I do not believe you can have a cogent conservative worldview or philosophy without at least first theism and definitely without some sort of biblical view. You can't. Because you're always going to be deriving it back to what standard, what moral worldview, what basis. Now, said differently, you could be an atheist. You're an atheist here tonight. God bless you. Glad you're here. And no, seriously, I mean that. And you could believe everything that I believe politically. I would just probably say you derived it from a theistic Christian worldview, if that makes sense. So do I think they're linked together? So let me say this. I think if you are a Bible-believing Christian, you should be a conservative as well, you know, conserving the good, the true, and the beautiful, protecting the vulnerable, those that can't protect themselves, using strength to protect the weak, not the strength to crush the weak, all these things that conservatives believe. At the same time, I do believe in a movement that is not only for Christians, because we live in a pluralistic society of differences of opinions. I'm always going to own the fact that I'm a Christian, as evidenced by inviting Frank right up, you know, to just witness for you at the beginning. He did a great job, didn't he? That was great. He really did. But it is a movement where we are trying to fight for liberty. You might think liberty is just an accident of evolution. I think liberty is God's idea, not man's idea. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. So honestly, I just wanted to ask how your wife and baby are doing.
Thank you. That's very kind. Baby is 9 weeks today. Praise God. And we're very happy. She's doing wonderful. Thank you. I think they're watching right now. So and it changes your life in every way possible. Highly recommend. 10 out of 10. You should do it. So God bless you. Thank you.
Hi. To address your previous assertion that race means nothing, critical race theory is not being taught in schools. It is a academic theory that's pretty much delegated only to higher academia. They're not teaching it in schools. Your explanation of it was an oversimplification. You address the real history behind it, unlike most people. And why, if race means nothing, does it affect our history? Say 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre. Why is there such evil history with something that supposedly means nothing?
Okay, so first of all, you're wrong. It is being taught in elementary schools. I'll give you an example. Not only is it being taught, it's being enforced. So in Denver, there is a playground where they say white families not allowed. Would you support that?
That seems like a ridiculous edge case.
So I'll give you another example. Actually, in the National Education Association's training manual, which is the largest teacher union in the country, they had a seminar on how to teach critical race theory to kids. That sounds like it's in our schools, doesn't it?
What that is it's literally just common sense. It's saying that this is real history. This is what has happened in the past.
Right. So
that matters.
Okay, got it. So, for example, would you say that black-only dormitories is wrong?
It certainly creates a sense of community. I don't see any problem with that. We have sororities. We have male-only dorms.
Right. So racial differences are irrelevant and immaterial. Chromosomal differences actually do matter. But let me ask you a question. Are there differences between races?
No, not biologically.
Then why would we have different dormitories for races?
Culture.
Segregation is what you're arguing for, my friend.
No, sir.
How is it not segregation to have blacks in their own dorm?
You've just pigeonholed me, essentially. You've distracted from my original argument.
No. You did that to yourself. Let's reemphasize. Ibram X. Kendi argues, who is one of the leading thinkers of critical theory, race theory, discrimination today to atone for discrimination of yesterday. We have black-only graduation ceremonies at Columbia University, black-only dormitories across the country, for example, at Western Washington University. Can you join me today in saying black-only dormitories are evil, wrong, and it's segregation?
You still haven't answered my question about why does this history simultaneously mean nothing?
Well, I'm happy to answer that, but the fact you're dodging segregation in America, why is that?
I'm arguing against segregation.
So you're against black-only dormitories?
Yes.
Well, you said it was a force of community, and then for your not-for-critical race theory.
That's an option. We have choice.
Oh, so you could choose to segregate.
That's a pigeonhole.
What do you think of white-only dormitories?
What?
Would you support white-only dormitories?
Everybody has a choice.
So I think white-only and black-only anything is evil and wrong. That's why I hate critical theory and critical race theory, because when it's put in practice, when it's put in practice, you start to discriminate people based on race. So we're now south of the Mason-Dixon line in North Carolina. We did a lot of work to get rid of segregation in this country. Why are you trying to bring it back?
What work?
The Civil Rights Act of 1964.
In this state?
Yeah, actually, in this state. Are there black-only bathrooms out there I'm unaware of, or white-only bathrooms?
Nah.
Right. A lot of work was done in this state.
Fuck you, your face is small.
Well, thanks for being here. They always go to insults when they lose the argument. God bless you, my friend. All right, next one.
I don't have an edgy race question.
Oh, okay.
But my question is, when 63% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, not even able to afford a home, car, or even basic necessities, when wages have only increased 15% since 1965, while the cost of a home has increased 118%, how does free market neoliberal capitalism address these issues when free market capitalism breeds these very issues?
So I probably agree with part of that. I would reject the neoliberal because I'm not a neoliberal, I believe.
The economy is neoliberal. You're not neoliberal.
Well, no, actually, the economy is partially neoliberal. So you
how
agree?
Is it not neoliberal?
Part of our trade policies have recently
We are globalized. We embrace globalization. That is neoliberal.
You're getting way ahead of yourself, dude. Like, you're at like a 10. You got to slow down to like a 6.
Okay, I'm here. I talk. I'm listening.
Okay, good. All right, so how would free market capitalism fix part of this? Yes. Well, the answer is that there are externalities of free market capitalism. Markets should serve people. People should not serve markets. I would say generally some of the facts that you cited are totally correct. I talked about the destruction of the American middle class. Some of that can be attributed to bad government policy. Hopefully you and I can agree that the government being able to create money out of thin air crushes the American middle class and creates a tax called inflation, where every single working person in this room is 1 month poor despite working harder this year. That is because of government, not because of free market capitalism, that inflation is running out of control. We spent $5 trillion we don't have on pet projects that were silly and awful and terrible. To your point, though, and I actually can agree, and I am not a neoliberal, is I actually think that our economic policy needs to be done prudently, not ideologically, in the sense of we should make more stuff here, we should protect the muscular class, we need to have our own industrial base, immigration should serve the American citizen, both legal, and we should have no illegal immigration, we should have a moratorium on legal immigration until wages go up and American workers and students are put first and given a preference. But I would say this, though. There are some market forces that could be generally really good, okay? And just throwing away all markets in kind of one sentence and just kind of dismissing it, I think would be a catastrophic mistake. I'll give you some examples.
I'm not anti-market.
Okay, good. I'm glad you clarified that. But I'd say that generally, the ability to be able to trade across state lines for small businesses to start new products, for family-owned businesses to pass down one family to the other without these crazy taxes and estate taxes, these are things I would support. Does that answer your question a little bit?
Yeah, but that's not free market capitalism then.
Okay, well, it depends how you define it, right? So do you mean laissez-faire, no government interference?
Well, no, it doesn't have to be laissez-faire. It's just that's not free market if you're only restricting jobs to America. It's not free market.
Okay, well, actually it is, because Adam Smith, the author of Wealth of Nations, yes, was a protectionist. Abraham Lincoln was a protectionist. So the original free market thinkers of the 1700s and 1800s, including Alexander Hamilton, they were free markets, but they were also nationalists. They wanted their country to be able to thrive and succeed because markets should serve people in the country. People in the country should not serve markets. That's my position economically. Markets are a general good for society. We should only intervene prudently when we see externalities that start to harm people or wages go down or there are results that we don't like in that regard. Thank you for your question and thanks for being here tonight.
Hey, Charlie, first of all, I want to just say thank you for being here tonight. Thank you for speaking, and thank you for giving other people a chance to speak. The question I wanted to ask was actually on something you said earlier, how you said the question of hierarchy is not necessarily that to get rid of elites, but to just have better elites. Mm-hmm. The argument I would counter, and I just want to know your thoughts, is the way I see hierarchy is you can have terrible people at the top, theoretically, people that are working in their own best interest, people that are corrupt, you know. And yes, that will affect the people at the bottom, but the way I've always seen hierarchy, especially in America, and some of the stuff I see today kind of goes back to what he said with lower wages. I'm sorry, I'm rambling. What is your opinion on the idea that hierarchy should be designed more so around just making sure the people at the bottom benefit, regardless of whether or not the elites are necessarily corrupt?
Well, yeah, that's a nice goal, but that didn't really work well in the 20th century.
Well, I was gonna comment on that in that some of the most prosperous points of America, a lot of people like to think back to it, things like the 60s and 70s.
For sure.
You had a very corrupt American elite. You had an American elite that was starting foreign wars. That was after World War II, where the defense industry was.
I would disagree. I think Eisenhower was a pretty ethical president compared to
the
gang of criminals we deal with now.
I'm not saying an individual president can't
okay,
be
that's fair.
A non-ethical person.
But would you agree the 50s economic policy was more focused on the middle class than the lower class, right? Because it was about an industrial base. It was about making stuff here abroad. It was about having trade policies that allowed us to be able to flourish and succeed. So the question, so you're always going to have you agree we're always going to have hierarchies.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Yeah, it's unavoidable.
Yeah, okay, good. Because a pure Marxist would say we eventually can get rid of them. I think that's woefully utopian. Yeah. But the question is then, when you design a system, who should it serve? Aristotle would argue the middle class is everything. I totally agree, right? It's the people that don't commit crimes, they pay their taxes, right? They're not going to get fabulously wealthy in their lifetime, but they should be able to have a commitment to retirement, see their life improve, their kids should be able to get well-educated and live a nice and normal life. And the society should be stabilized around that, right? When that middle class disappears and you get a permanent government addicted class, too much on the bottom, or you get too much of an oligarchy on top, then I think the entire system starts to shatter. So I think we're saying the same things in some ways. But my argument is that you're always going to have hierarchies. And I would love to be able to see leaders in the top of the hierarchy, the billionaire class, if you will, pander less to the needs, wants, and interests of some esoteric climate change propaganda from the World Economic Forum, and instead say, hey, I have a lot of money. How am I going to use that money to benefit people's freedom and liberty and middle class potential, not trying to turn off our energy supremacy or superiority, which is the dumbest thing and actually hurts middle-income Americans and make your energy bills even more expensive, if that makes sense.
So I guess you would probably agree then that kind of the difference between the 50s and now is that the middle class has kind of been ground down on the
totem pole. Yeah, intentionally, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So then,
I think it's a variety of things. I think public policy. I think Wall Street's taken over our government. But also, I will say this. I don't agree with libertarians on a lot of stuff, but they are totally right on monetary policy. Our monetary policy has been a robbery campaign of the American middle class, of destroying the American dollar, of depleting our purchasing power since the 1950s. So, for example, in the 1950s, your dollar just went further than it does now. It did. And that destroys middle income earners and is a rigged game against working people. Got to get to the next question. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hello. I had a statement to say. You were banned on Twitter or whatever because you dead named somebody. And then you also you put out the point that people were being banned for saying the truth about the corona vaccine. I just wanted to say that two wrongs does not make a right. It's not right that you were deplatformed. I don't think anybody should be deplatformed for saying anything. I fully believe in freedom of speech. But I mean, I wasn't so happy with you. You seem kind of proud about, not proud, but it just wasn't seem wrong to you that you were dead naming somebody. I get it. You know, if it was a mistake, that's fine.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't? Okay. Well, okay. Then you're proud of it. That does not make it right. I think as generations go on, we become more accepting to things. And I think that even if you don't like somebody, it's not a good idea to normalize dead naming.
Yeah, so can you explain our audience what is dead naming? You probably know it better than I do.
Is when somebody transitions and they choose a new name conforming to their gender. So if their name was Lisa before and they changed it to Jack, if you called them Lisa before that or Lisa after they transitioned, that is dead naming.
What's wrong with that?
I think it's very wrong because I have a lot of trans friends. And if they were dead named, it would be, I mean, shattering to them because it's something that is so personal
shattering?
To them. What?
Shattering?
Yes. Yes. It's who they are now. People don't transition just for the hell of it, you know? It's a very personal thing to them. They don't do it to appeal to the other gender or whatnot.
Yeah, so but let's think about it. Isn't it part of their biography? Can you really erase history and act as if that wasn't your name for a while? For example, it was another name than Rachel Levine.
Well, why do names matter so much? I mean, it's what you want to be called. It's just a title for you.
But it's part of your biography, right? It's a fact that a man who now thinks he's a woman had a family, got married, and then magically decided to no longer be a man. I was talking facts, so your problem would be with telling of a biography?
Well, I mean, it's not as deep as you think it is. It's just somebody, it's them now. And it's just being respectful.
Oh, okay, but it's being respectful by not being able to act as if they were something that they weren't. Isn't their whole identity in being no longer what they were? So it shouldn't shatter them. It should be empower them.
No.
So then why do they call themselves trans if it's not their whole identity?
Well, they don't, people don't go out saying, guess what? I'm trans.
Yeah,
they
do.
They just kind of exist. That's Twitter. That's Twitter. I can guarantee you.
And TikTok and most campuses and the trans groups and the trans flag and the trans parade and the trans music and the trans stuff. People say they're trans all the time. If the change is not part of their identity, then why do they call themselves trans?
Well, I mean, it's just a title. Everybody, like, our society is more, you know, we want titles for just about everything.
I agree. So I don't accept the title and I should have a right not to accept it.
Well, everybody has a right to be respected. They haven't done any wrong to you.
No, you don't have a right to be respected. You have a right to speak. You have to earn respect in a decent society.
Okay, I'm sorry. I want to fully understand what you mean, like,
yeah, so for example, I don't respect the Unabomber.
Okay.
That's an extreme example.
Okay.
I don't respect people that perform abortions.
Okay.
I don't respect people that medically mutilate children.
Okay.
And I don't respect someone that is taking Lupron and says they're a man all of a sudden and demands I comply. That's not the way the world works. Respect must be earned.
I think respect is just a give, like it's a base thing. It's not like I'm going to go into this room and say, I disrespect every single one of you because you don't believe what I believe, or you're not presenting how I want. You know, I mean,
well, okay. So what about my respect? Why was I kicked off Twitter? You said it's wrong, but you can all of a sudden see where your viewpoint quickly becomes, and we have to shut somebody up because you deserve respect.
I mean, honest to God, I'm not trying to like, I'm kind of losing my thoughts a little bit, but I just want to put out there that I think it's just basic human respect. You know, it's not that deep. People just, if they feel one way and they truly believe it, it's not just, oh shit, I feel like being a boy now. It's not just a on the whim decision. It's something that's held inside.
Right. Well, hold on a second. But I just want to, I think you're being sincere in this regard, but why? So let's just take gender affirming care or whatever you might call it. Okay. Right.
Yes.
So affirming someone's mental delusion where they think they're a man or a woman, why is that the appropriate line of treatment? For example, do we give liposuction to people that are anorexic?
Well, no, I mean, I think...
No, because we know better. We know it's going to harm them. And we love that person.
No,
so that's not medicine. That would be torture.
Yeah, and not everybody who decides to transition decides to change their genitalia or go through something completely irreversible, right?
That's true. Some do, though. Tens of thousands.
I have conflicted opinions on gender-affirming surgery because it's irreversible. And if it's a decision made too young of an age, then it's not right to do it on children.
No, that's fair. I appreciate the honesty. Yeah. I really mean that. And you should be encouraged. I wish more people were sane enough to say that. Mm-hmm. But let me kind of complete the point. A biography should not be eliminated because someone demands respect. For example, I can say that Muhammad Ali used to be called Cassius Clay. It's part of his life. And then he found Islam and he decided to be called something else. And all of a sudden you get this rancor and this uproar that somehow I'm being hateful and no longer worthy of a Twitter platform because I said a fact that Levine had a name and a family and was a man and then claims he's a woman. If all of a sudden history and facts can be erased, we are dangerously approaching a 1984 dystopian world control scenario that I don't think any of us should entertain. Final thoughts?
Okay. To wrap it up, my point was basically just, I think it's better to normalize just, or not normalize, but like not put out that it's okay to do these types of things. I think it's just general human respect. I think we just all need to become more accepting and we don't really need to, you know.
Got it. And so my opinion is 180. We have clarity, not agreement. I'm not going to accept mental delusions with force. Thank you for being here tonight.
Okay.
All right. Hey, what's up? So my question is, given that 97% of scientists agree that man-made climate change exists and that it will cause negative impacts in our lifetime, from more severe storms to droughts, how do you as a conservative deal with that fact? And what do you want to do to address it?
Sure. I'm really curious about the 3%, aren't you?
Yeah, I guess like, I don't know, like 3% of people think that if they can fly, but they can't. You know?
But it's 3% of scientists. Why do they think it's not anthropogenic?
I don't think about the 3%. I think about the 97%.
Is science
like,
a democracy?
Just like how we think about, you know, 97% of people who are struggling day to day. We don't think about the 1%.
Well, hold on. That's not how the way science works. Do we take an up or down vote on Newtonian physics? Who thinks force equals mass times acceleration? It's irrelevant because we can prove it.
Yeah, but there's still like 2% of scientists that are probably nuts who don't agree with that, right?
No.
No? I mean, if we poll them, we can always find a nut. Why do we have to...
You think 2% of American physicists would say that force does not equal mass times acceleration, or would reject Newtonian physics or the second law of thermodynamics?
2 or 3% of people think that they can fly, you know?
But they're not scientists.
Insane.
And I don't think 2 or 3% of people could fly, think they can fly. I don't think that's exactly right. The point is this. Science is not a democracy, is it?
No, absolutely not. So what do you think? Where do you think that 97% comes from?
Well, first of all, the study is flawed in and of itself. It's government funded. It's way overquoted. Let's pretend it's right, though. OK, you go through this. People are incentivized to come to certain conclusions. But I'm fascinated by the 3%. The 3%, the 2%, the 1%, the dissenter in science is always given a platform. That's what the scientific method is all about. In fact, prior to Galileo, we thought that the Earth was the center of the universe. And then Galileo was like, no, actually, it's the heliocentric theory. You know what happened to Galileo? Tried and put in prison and out to pasture because he dared disagree with the status quo and the scholastic belief. History is not very kind to the overwhelming tyrannical nature of scientists that say 97% of us agree that lobotomies work until we realize they don't. Now, you might be right. It might be man-made. It might be anthropogenic. But that 3% has a lot of credence. You should look at them. Read their journals. They argue that there's thousands of other explanations for rising global temperatures other than just carbon emitted from human beings. Sunspots, global tilt, natural cooling and heating patterns. And just to say it's all human beings all the time also begs the question, to what extent, what do you do about it, and what are you willing to then sacrifice?
So real quick, you can actually check charts online that show you the graphs of how sunspots tend to affect temperatures in the United States. Sunspots, volcanic eruptions, all this stuff. And all of it doesn't account for the amount of difference that we've seen recently. So what do you say to that?
Depends on what scientists you talk to. That's what it's all about.
It's not the scientist. It's just the science itself. Like if you check graphs on any website.
So show me a single scientist that can tell me without a shadow of a doubt, empirically proven, that man-made carbon emissions is solely to blame. And to what blame, and what is the equation? And then what can we possibly do about it? So this is a question, right?
No, again, I'm not saying that anyone is solely to blame. I'm just saying that humans are a big factor, and that's what most people
define
believe.
Big. What's the number big?
I couldn't give you that exact number.
Well, then maybe we shouldn't shut down the entire economy and change our energy sector over a number we can't define.
Or maybe I'm just a college...
Right? I mean, we're talking about
but
Europe.
But I'm just saying maybe I'm just a college student who doesn't have that number.
No, that's
them.
Fine. But now we're talking about shutting down Europe and having an entire green energy obsession making...
I'm not saying that.
But you are saying is when you start engaging in green energy fantasy or climate change fanaticism, let me call it that, you're going to have serious ramifications. The United Kingdom could be a net energy exporter. Instead, this winter, they're going to have rolling blackouts. They're going to have people potentially dying from blizzards and from incredible cold. Why? Because they've had this entire green energy propaganda campaign that is making themselves intentionally poor because of a community of scientists that are saying we must shut ourselves down because of anthropogenic, human-made, man-made caused climate change. Ask the question, wait a second, what if the premise itself is faulty? And by the way, 97% of scientists were also saying, yeah, the COVID vaccine is the best thing ever. Ivermectin is awful and terrible. So excuse me while I'm just the dissenting contrarian voice, which says the scientific community, whether it be in climate alarmism or in COVID vaccines or in epidemiology, I won't trust Anthony Fauci in epidemiology, nor will I trust his equivalent in climate change alarmism. In fact, I've grown accustomed to believe there's probably an agenda behind a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, for sure. You should never trust... For sure. You should never trust just one scientist. And that's why I'm saying we should probably trust the 97% who say that.
I'm really glad science is not a democracy. Otherwise, we would be in a very dark place. Always listen to the dissenting voice. That 3% is well-researched. It's in the minority. It's been suppressed. And that 97% figure has been used now to really restrict Western energy dominance. It's making us poor and making the elite stronger because of it. Thank you for being here tonight. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay. I just wanted to real quick ask you, can you clarify your definition of critical race theory?
Yeah, Derek Bells. So what he wrote in 1991, Intro to Critical Race Theory. What's in that book?
The whole book is your definition.
How about this? The one I used. Call everything racist till you control it.
Oh, so wait, but then that literally means that critical race theory can mean basically anything you want it to, right?
Like, if you're calling it racist till you control it. I mean, I'm defining critical race theory in the modern American context as that. We can go back to Herbert Marcuse's One Dimensional Man or Jacques Derrida or Michel Foucault, but the most agreed upon academic theory is Intro to Critical Race Theory, 1991 by Derrick Bell.
Yeah. Wait, but...
Are you familiar with that literature?
Well, yeah, I've read the book, but I don't remember anything about it. It was for like a college class. Like, let's be honest, nobody remembers the books they read in college.
Sounds like a great value proposition to go to college.
No, it is. Trust me. But like, but you didn't go to college, so I guess you wouldn't know.
It's true, I didn't. So let me ask you, though, does that mean that I'm not able to have this conversation with you? Because I actually remember the book and you didn't, and you paid for it.
So, first of all, I didn't pay for it. There's these things called scholarships.
Oh, so somebody else paid for you not to remember the book that you were supposed to read. Oh, some wealthy donor or taxpayer paid for you to not remember the book.
I have a question. Who are your wealthy donors?
Many of them are in this room. Thank you guys for your wonderful support, by the way.
Interesting.
We have over 130,000 grassroots donors at Turning Point USA, 130,000. I think we have some people in the back that chip in $5, $10, $15. God bless you, God bless you, God bless you, God bless you, God bless you. We are a grassroots-funded operation. But let me give you another example. I'll give you five things that critical race theory believes. Number one, the notion that racism is ordinary and everywhere. Number two, the idea of interest convergence, otherwise known as intersectionality. Number three, the social construction of race, meaning that there is a social construction around race in our society. The four, idea of storytelling and counter-storytelling. Number five is that no matter how hard you work, no matter how hard you do, you cannot remove racism from your society. Those are five pillars of critical race theory based on Derek Bell's Intro to Critical Race Theory. Does that ring a bell?
Yes, but like, okay, so let me stick with this. What do you think? Oh, fuck.
We'll edit that out.
My train. Oh, my bad. Wait, am I not allowed to?
It's not encouraged.
Oh, okay. Sorry. What was the third point? My mind is dying.
The social construction of race?
The social construction of race. Do you not think that race is at least partially socially constructed?
Depends how you define it.
So, like, what defines where one race ends and where one race begins?
Depends who you're asking. I think race is completely and totally irrelevant. Do you think race is relevant?
No.
Okay, then why are we talking about race all the time? And why are we talking about critical race theory?
Well, you brought it up at first when you were doing your speech.
Right, so, remember I said it was a lie from the pit of hell that we should repudiate and stop talking about all the time? You're on scholarship?
Sorry, what?
Nothing, sorry, go ahead.
So, to answer your question, I don't think that race means anything, and I guess you don't either, right?
Yeah.
Right. So then why do you keep bringing up race whenever you're on or speaking on a stage? I am not speaking on a stage bringing up critical race theory.
No. So. I'm bringing up how critical race theory destroys society and how we shouldn't talk about race all the time.
Okay. But you're bringing up race.
No, critical race theory, not race.
Okay, so what's the second word in that?
Yeah, it's race, but it's a theory of how to view race, of which is a mind virus pathogen destroying America, of which I said again, just to reemphasize for those in the back, we could replay the tape, we'd throw the red flag, we'll watch it over again. I said that what? Race means nothing. I care about your actions, your character, and most importantly, your soul. Thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you.
So I'm not really asking much of a question, but I'm looking for advice. I want to run for Congress in a few years when I become of age. And I'm just wondering if you have any pointers or direction you can help guide me.
You should run. We need more young people to run. We have Turning Point Action, which is not represented here tonight, which is our political arm that would love to help you and train you and pour into you. It's an amazing organization that's doing such awesome things. Knock on more doors than your opponent, have a message that resonates to voters, respect your elders, and talk to people that have been in politics for a while and listen to them. I don't like when young people run for office and they don't listen to people that have been around for a while. They've really cut their teeth. They've been through a lot. It's something that I had to learn the hard way early on and really be like, okay, what did you learn through this? What happened in this cycle and all that? They have a lot of wisdom to pass down. And I think you're going to be very welcomed and well-received as a younger candidate. I mean that.
Thank you.
God bless you. Thank
God
you.
God bless you.
Hey, Charlie. My name is Dylan. I'm actually the president of the chapter at University of South Carolina. So I was actually at CLS this summer, you know, where you said chapters change the world, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. I was just asking you, so we had our fall semester come by. It's October now, and we had a big crop of freshmen come in the beginning. But little by little, you know, some peter out and some stop showing up. So what would be your advice on sustaining membership?
Yeah, just have events, be publicly out there, always trying to invite dialogue and discussion. And look, our Turning Point USA chapter deserves a lot of credit for what they've done here tonight. And you guys do such a great job. I was just there a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I can't remember. Everything is a blur post 2020. It all just kind of comes as a blur. But you got to stay engaged. You got to make it interesting. And then, you know, try to invite as many speakers as you can to campus. And then everyone loves a good debate. Yeah. When you're looking for something to do, try to have a debate. Dialogue, disagreement is always the best thing you could do.
And we'd love to have you back.
Hey, I'll put it on the list. I went to Clemson last year, so I got to atone for that, right?
Yes.
I know, you're shocked. Hey, I won't do that again anytime soon. I love Clemson. Great
people. We're going to beat them this year. We are. Mark my words.
Right. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Have a good one.
Hello. I just want you to answer this one question. Do you understand that as a white man, you do not have to apologize for being white? You just have to acknowledge the racism that happens around you. That is all.
What racism happens around me?
Let's say that a racist police officer shoots me, right, and kills me, right? For you to be a white man and you see that and don't say anything about it, I believe that my community would be upset about that. Now, all you have to do as a white man, you don't have to get on the internet or on Twitter and say, I'm sorry for being white, but you should at least acknowledge the racism that happens around you.
Okay, well, yeah, if an individual act of racism happens...
That is just taking accountability for what happens around you.
Hold on a second. First of all, I don't have to be accountability for a whole race, do I? Why do I have to be accountable for the white race?
For yourself.
Right, so if I'm racist, I'll take responsibility for that.
You probably are not racist, but...
Well, thank you. So then why do I have to comment on somebody else's racism?
But what you should do is take accountability for the racism around you. Not pretend that it doesn't happen around you. Like, again, the example that I gave you, that if I was shot by a police officer and you found out that person was racist, right? Now,
but why would you say take responsibility? How can I take responsibility for somebody else's actions?
What you should do is just take accountability and say, hey, yes, that was racist, instead of saying, no, that officer wasn't racist.
Well, hold on. You got to show me an instance and an example, but we're talking about such a micro problem that doesn't exist. Do you know that a black person is 18 and a half times more likely to shoot and kill a police officer than a police officer is to go and shoot an unarmed black man?
But is that the question that I asked you?
No, you asked a hypothetical about if I'm going to take accountability for a racist police officer.
So again...
But so, I mean, do you understand, if I inverted it on you, would you take accountability for all the blacks killing police in America?
That was funny.
No, would you? Why don't you take accountability for all the blacks killing police in New York?
I wouldn't take accountability for it. But what I would say is, yes, there are a lot of black people in my community who do dumb things to other black people and to other white people. What I would not do is just pretend that it doesn't happen, so that, like I said, you as a white man has to do the same thing.
I acknowledge it happens. I also acknowledge it's rarer than lightning striking you when you're outside. But let me ask you, who is Tony Timpa?
That's all I wanted you to do. Thank you.
I acknowledge it's rare, and I'm not going to have to take responsibility for an entire race at all. It's wrong and it's terrible. I wish we could have continued the conversation. Hello, how are you?
I would like to say thank you for coming to UNC Charlotte. Mm-hmm. I do have a question about you, about cannabis. You probably don't get many questions about cannabis. So I would like to ask you about your stance on cannabis and then follow up with a following question.
Probably in the past overly policed, but should not be legalized.
Should not be legalized. And is it what is the reasons why you don't believe, or you believe it should stay illegal?
Yeah, now, so we have an overwhelming amount of data to show when it's legalized, states get more dangerous, it gets messier, more homelessness, more vagrancy, more overdoses, more kids going on drugs, more heroin overdoses. It is a gateway drug. regardless what people say. It's laced with chemicals, with fentanyl, with hallucinogenics. Colorado went from the 10th in carjackings to first in carjackings, fourth in arson to the first in arson, third in rape to the second in rape. I mean, I could go through every statistic. Every state that has legalized weed has seen more crime, more vagrancy, more dropouts, more kids on the social outcast of society.
Would you say that when you legalize marijuana, you can see the lab tests, you can see all the toxic chemicals inside of the cannabis plant, you can see how much THC is in there, how much CBD, what terpenes, if it has limonene, pinene, myrcene, there's a lot of cannabinoids inside.
Sounds
of the,
terrible.
No. It's actually good. It's actually quite unique because there are different strains with different types of benefits. Some people take it recreationally. Some people take it for medical purposes. So why not we legalize it so it's safer for our community, so people know what they're consuming, and also that also we take marijuana off of the schedule. Well, the
Yes, to make it federally legal so you
federally
can bank with
legal.
It. But let me ask you this. So you say, why not? Can you give me an example of any state that has legalized weed and it's gotten safer?
And it's gotten safer? Yeah. So my knowledge is basically based on not necessarily my question is not basically about if whether about that statistics, but
you
based
said safer.
On,
I mean, that would be probably critical.
Well,
right?
It's safer in terms of consumption, in terms of what you're consuming. If it has toxic chemicals. When,
yeah, but guess what? You know, people still buy illegal weed despite the fact there's weed dispensaries on the corner in Vegas and in Denver. You don't get rid of the illegal drug market. You only enhance them to go to harder drugs and things they can't get in the store itself. There's more drug use in America than ever before, and we've legalized more drugs than ever before. It's been the great failure of the drug project the last 10 years. Every promise they've made is wrong. Oh, it's gonna weaken the cartels. No, it's not. They're stronger than ever. Oh, we're gonna get all this drug revenue. Actually, not really. There's more need for revenue because of the services that we can't even facilitate because of all the drugs. Or how about this one? They're like, oh yeah, it's better because kids are passing drugs in school. Yeah, now they're passing fentanyl in school, no longer weed in school. And so not only that, the crime, the vagrancy, the homelessness, the defecation, everywhere it's legalized has gotten more dangerous, period. So why would you want to bring that to our communities?
So it's not that's not what I'm asking. That's not what I was basically talking about here. What I'm talking about is basically the consumption of the safetiness about of people who consume cannabis. And also there are many, many, lots of good benefits too, in terms of a lot, there are a lot of good terpenes in terms of limonene, also pinene. Actually,
yeah. Can I ask you, when was the last time you did weed, man?
Hmm? Huh?
When was the last time you did weed?
Well, I may not answer that question.
Yeah, I think rather recently.
hey, but we still respect each other.
We do, and thank you for being a walking commercial to not do drugs. Thanks for being here tonight.
Don't do hard drugs.
I know you were all thinking it too as he was asking the question. I could feel it. All right.
Well, Charlie, it's an honor to be speaking with you. You're a great inspiration of mine. I would love to be in your field one day, kind of doing what you do as well as the other guy that was talking about running for office. I think that one thing that makes it very difficult a lot of times is that we live in a society that doesn't promote doing things differently. Like, you didn't go to college and, you know, you're very adamant against the college scam. But as well as different aspects, as we live in a world that is just very aggressive towards a lot of those different things. And like, for me as a high schooler, with a lot of steps I take, you know, to kind of get in that field, whether it be going to council meetings or doing a podcast, different things like that. What would you say that, whether it be a piece of literature or maybe social networking cues to pick up on, that would really enhance, maybe not enhance, but help you kind of beat that system?
Yeah. So look, you're talking about how to get into politics, basically, right? In some ways.
Yes. Socially.
Here's the cool thing about politics. It's a meritocracy. You show up early, you stay late, you're going to get rewarded. And anyone, I know there's some people running for office here tonight. Glad you guys are here. They're always looking for volunteers. They're always looking for people to help them. They're looking for people to show up early on Saturday to go knock on doors. Be eager and willing. do not be above any job. So the kind of overgeneralized story of Turning Point USA doesn't mention that, you know, in high school, I knocked on 100,000 doors for some candidates in Illinois. That's, you got to cut your teeth doing that, right? You got to knock on doors. You got to make phone calls. You got to get in the grassroots. It's the, in politics, the cool thing is no one cares you went to school. No one cares your degrees. No one cares about that stuff. They care about how much work you've put in. That's the best advice I could give you. You will move up so quickly in politics if you get early, get in early, stay late, and don't complain. Those three things. Get in early, stay late, and don't complain. That's the best piece of advice I have for you. Thank you. And if you disagree, you guys can get preference. I know our wonderful staff is helping out. Hello, how are you?
Hi, good evening. First of all, thank you for saying yes to the call that God has placed in your life, okay? Two, congratulations to your beautiful bundle of joy. Savor every moment because it flies, okay? I have a direct quote from Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood. We do not want word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. That is a direct quote. So my question is, knowing that abortion takes the lives of babies of all colors and ethnic backgrounds, but understanding it's the black genocide of today,
right, it is.
Hands down, what have you discovered to be the most effective or creative way to combat the lies regarding this genocidal agenda?
I like you. She's great. It is black genocide. And thank you for saying that out loud. I say that and the media loses their mind. Yeah. But it disproportionately impacts the black community. Life is beautiful and life begins at conception. And we are seeing disproportionate amount of abortion clinics, Planned Parenthood clinics. And the founder was a eugenicist, period. The founder of Planned Parenthood was a eugenicist. Yes. Now, are the current leaders of it eugenicists? We don't know, but if you were trying to exterminate the black population, how would you do things any differently than what Planned Parenthood is doing right now? So how do we go back against it? We got to play offense. We got to explain the pro-life issue. We got to talk about why life is beautiful. And honestly, we also got to step up, those of us that are Christians and conservatives, with the resources, the charities, the services to make sure that we get rid of the myth of unwanted children. There is not an unwanted child in America. We just need to make sure people that are in crisis, that are pregnant, are able to find adoption services, find the services necessary. That's the way I lead on it. But honestly, I yield back to Malcolm X, who number one did call it a black genocide. And I don't agree with Malcolm X on everything, but you know what else? You know who he blamed? The white liberal. Yeah. And he was right. This is a tyranny of the white liberal going after the black community. Let me just kind of ask you a question in closing here. What is your message to white liberals out there that are trying to push this in the black community?
If you don't do the research and if you don't understand, then shut up. Do the research. No, I'm serious.
Do the work.
Do the work. Understand why that over, I think it's 88% of Planned Parenthoods are strategically placed in black and minority neighborhoods. Why? Let's reverse engineer. Why is it like in the state of New York, there are more black babies being murdered in the womb than are alive? So the words of Margaret Sanger has turned out to be prophetic. And also the abortion agenda is a multi-billion dollar industry. There is money in dead baby parts. You can find it. It was found in food, cosmetics, everywhere. So this is the facts. This is the truth.
Give it up for her. That's great. Give it up for her.
Evening. My question is, who killed Dr. King?
Name escapes me.
The name?
The name escapes me, yeah. But yeah. I believe it. I mean, yeah, name escapes me.
Yeah. Okay, so would you say it could be the FBI?
Could be.
Would you say that it is the FBI?
Not definitively, but I certainly don't trust the FBI after recent years, so I'm open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so another point you made earlier. What do you think about separation of church and state?
Doesn't exist. Well, shouldn't exist.
Yeah. Shouldn't exist?
Yeah.
So you should have church in the state.
Well, first, where in the Constitution does it say that?
We can't have the First Amendment.
Where?
It's about the religion, right? So there's no exception of religion. There's no exception.
It doesn't say that.
Yes, it does.
It says Congress shall make no law establishing religion or prohibiting the exercise thereof. Where does it say church and state?
Religion.
Well, hold on. It says that Congress shall make no official religion or prohibiting the exercise thereof. Where does it say that the church can't get involved in the state?
It could be involved, but it can't be the religion established.
Hold on. We're talking about two different things then,
right? No, see, because what you're saying is that, you can be a Christian and be in the government. And that's true. That's how it works right now. You can be a Christian and be in the government, right? But you cannot establish Christianity as the basis of...
Well, no, that's not what I'm arguing. I'm arguing that Christians should be in the government and the church should be actively involved. Where do we get that phrase, separation of church and state, from?
The First Amendment.
No, we don't. No, it's Thomas Jefferson writing to the Danbury Baptist Convention in Massachusetts, assuring them that the church would not come after the state. So let me ask you a question. Let's pretend that church and state is the law of the land, right? That the Warren Court and the Burger Court argued in the 1950s and 1960s. Then why on earth did we put up with the government going around and shutting down churches during the pandemic? I thought we need separation of church and state. Why is it that the government can go and shut down churches?
Okay, so
aren't they supposed to be separate?
I actually played for a church. I played drum set, right? So I would go to church. And they're not shutting down churches because of COVID. They're saying that, it's unsafe to be in public. In person.
But they shouldn't have the right to do it because I thought they're supposed to be separate. Right?
I mean, for general safety? I mean, if you want people dying, then...
Oh, so you could shut them down for safety. So it's not separate. It's like we can come in for whatever reason we deem necessary to restrict your religion? It's
not restricting. You can practice from on camera. We played through live stream and online.
Yeah. This so watching church on a live stream is like watching a fireplace on TV. You could see everything with no warmth.
Okay, but if God is real all the time and you can't go to church because of a disease going around.
What does it say in the Bible about do not forsake the gathering of believers where two or more are gathered in my name?
Okay, so what does it say about conception? When does it begin?
Huh?
Conception? Or when does life begin?
At conception, of course. Yeah.
I thought it said at first breath.
No, it actually doesn't say that. So
what's the verse?
Well, hold on. First of all, it says, I knew you before you were... in the womb.
Yeah.
And what you are doing is paraphrasing what you consider to be ex nihilo, out of nothing, made in the image of God. The breath of God was actually where life begins. So the question would be, was John the Baptist a baby when he leapt in Elizabeth's womb?
Was he?
Are you a Christian?
Me?
Yeah.
Am I?
You play drums at a church, so I hope you're a Christian.
You too? But you're missing the point. It sounds like
no, I'm actually not missing.
I asked you the verse that says that it begins at conception,
right? So I knew you before you were in the womb is one of many verses of which it reinforces that you should protect life in the womb.
But you're doing is interpreting, right? So I want you to tell me where
I'm reading.
Life begins at how are you reading? There's no book.
There's no book. I've memorized scripture. You should try it.
So you're reading it in your brain right now.
Well, no, in Jeremiah, it says very clearly, I knew you before you were in the womb.
Yeah. So when it says in the Bible that conception begins at first breath.
No, it doesn't say that. It doesn't.
What does it say?
You're misquoting it very clearly. Psalm 139, 13 through 16. For you formed my inward parts, it says. You wove me in my mother's womb, it says. Mm-hmm. I will give thanks to you, for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. Fearfully, wonderfully made, and my inward works. That sounds like a baby in the womb, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, a fetus in the womb.
A fetus in the womb?
Yeah.
What species is that fetus?
A fetus? Species.
What species is that fetus?
Human.
So it would be a human life?
Yeah, it would be, eventually.
Oh, but when does it become a human life, then?
When it's born, when it breathes.
Oh, really? So that a 26-week-old preemie baby that is saved because of a cesarean section isn't a baby until it comes out of the womb?
I mean, if it's born, it's born.
So you believe that we should be able to terminate a pregnancy up until the moment of birth?
Did I say that?
I'm asking.
No.
Okay, so then what restriction on abortion would you give?
Well, if the woman who is giving birth is going to die?
which never happens.
Which never happens.
That's right. So that's right. It is a mythology that women will die if they have a baby. You could talk to entire communities of OBs. You know why? Because if cesarean option is entertained, then you could save both the mother and the baby. Instead, the abortion industry lies to the mother, and they say that you must terminate the baby to save the mother's life. So you could talk to hundreds of Christian OBs and non-Christian OBs, and they will tell you that is a mythology of the abortion industry.
No, that's funny.
No, it's actually not funny.
No. I'm saying the way you represent facts, like willingly and knowingly.
I'm sorry.
The way you knowingly like represent facts. You say, oh, okay, abortion. Oh, it's terrible because you can't possibly save the baby and you can't possibly save the mother at the same time. It happens. The 10-year-old in Ohio, right?
Yes, a cesarean section could have saved the baby's life and the mother's life. Do you know what a cesarean section is?
Do you?
Yes, my wife had one.
Oh, okay. I'm saying when they baby, right?
So do you know what a cesarean section is or no?
I honestly don't know.
Yeah, so I would, here's a little word to the wise. Let's quit while you're ahead. A cesarean section is a medical intervention that saves tens of thousands of lives every single year of a small slit done at the at the top of a woman's C-section. Pelvis. Yeah, cesarean section. That's a C-section abbreviated, all right?
Wow.
So maybe that's where we get the term C-section from. Oh, so guess what? If every woman that's lied to by Planned Parenthood was given a C-section instead of an abortion, then all of a sudden abortion would not be necessary to save their life.
Every single one of them.
If you talk to hundreds of OBs across the country, they will say medical necessary abortion is a lie.
So
period.
You're 10 years
end
old,
of story.
Right, and you're pregnant, right? You're 10 years old and pregnant, okay? So you really can't give birth through your womb. You can't give
so
birth
to
that.
So you do a C-section.
How?
You cut them open and you lift the baby up and everyone lives.
How does the baby survive?
Hopefully through a work of God and also medical technology that is the most common surgery in America. So I'll kind of close with this and then we'll get to the next question because we're running low on time. When does life begin?
At first breath.
At first breath. That moral standard of first breath would therefore believe that you could have abortion up until the moment of birth. Life begins at conception. I'm going to say this as nicely as I possibly can. You're a drummer at a church. You should probably reconsider that because you are advocating for the most horrific and brutal eugenic non-Christian abortion policies that I could possibly imagine. I hope you prayerfully reconsider and repent. Thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you
for being here tonight.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm a big fan of yours.
Thank you.
And I'm really nervous, so if I stutter, I
love the Bills, by the way. They are my favorite team because they never win. Five Super Bowls in a row, they lost. Four or five.
Four.
It's so tragic. I love how they never win, and I'm cheering for them. I love Josh Allen. He's amazing.
Yes.
He loves playing the sport. They're my favorite team. I have nothing to do with.
So I assume that you know about the trans woman in the girls' locker room in Vermont. And so I, of course, disagree with that completely. And I don't believe we should accommodate for trans people, but for the safety of actual women and to avoid another situation like what happened in Virginia twice this year and last year, with a boy who decided that he wanted to put on a skirt and go into the girls' restroom and decided to rape an actual girl, do you believe that we should make a trans locker room for people with this issue?
No. We should not accommodate our society based on somebody's mental delusion or illness. I hope they get treatment. I hope they get compassionate treatment, which is not gender-affirming care. Psychologists should not affirm your delusion. They should challenge you with love back into alignment of how God made you. And so what is the solution? If you're a man who thinks you're a woman, go in the men's locker room. Go wear a dress in the men's locker room. Why do we need to accommodate you and put you in a locker room of your choosing? Answer. Because we've completely inverted our morality to give a platform to people that claim they're oppressed and when in reality they aren't. And we should not reconfigure society based on groups that say that, oh, feel so sorry for me because I'm a victim. Yeah, actually, that's not the way that we should do things. Instead, you get a lot of other people having to reaccommodate their language, their speech, and their privacy and the protection of our women for some sort of fringe mental illness that unfortunately is plaguing our country. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie.
Oh, wait.
Hi, Charlie. So you mentioned earlier that you wanted to meet an anti-war leftist, a genuine one. Well, you've got one standing right in front of you.
Praise God, man. Thanks for being here.
So pretty much every U.S. president for the past 20 years has disappointed the living hell out of me when it comes to foreign policy. George Bush with the 2003 invasion of Iraq, Barack Obama with that barbaric drone program, and frankly, Donald Trump's was not too much better. And now Joe Biden and I don't like the $460 billion he gets of weapons he sold to Saudi Arabia.
Fair.
We know
that's,
where
that's
those
fair,
go.
But come on. I mean, Trump at least, let's go through Trump. I mean, come on.
Now, listen. He didn't start World War III like CNN knows. I acknowledge that.
Okay, well, then we're getting somewhere. All right.
I'm just saying I'm not going to pretend that he's this, you know, passive, that he's the all-time pacifist because I don't see
Well, no, I don't think he was an all-time pacifist, but could we at least agree he was the greatest challenge to the American foreign policy neoconservative regime in a generation?
I don't see it as that different from Barack Obama's, the drone strikes, the intervention.
Okay, let's go through it then. Okay, so Trump was given a choice whether or not to escalate in Afghanistan or to draw down. He was drawn down correctly. And he went against every one of his generals. They intervened.
The numbers actually fluctuated throughout his presidency.
But there was a withdrawal plan. Admittedly, he didn't go through with it.
And yeah, because he didn't get reelected. And don't get me wrong,
a big part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of Joe Biden's withdrawal plan, in my opinion.
No, that was a catastrophe. It was an insult to everybody.
The troops should have been the last ones to leave. They should have kept a barrier between the Taliban and Kabul. That was pretty obvious.
Well, it's also like you got to remove a kidney. You don't take a pocket knife and just start, you know, that was basically our withdrawal from Afghanistan.
Exactly, but what I really
Let's go through the Trump thing. I think I might be able to win you over on this.
Okay.
He's the only president to be able to administer peace between Israel and Arab partners. That's a good thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's a good thing.
Right. He rejected calls and clamor to escalate with Iran that very well could have been even worse than the Ukrainian escalation. He met with Putin to try to de-escalate tensions with Russia. I mean, come on, you got to give some acknowledgement here,
with
right?
The Iran thing, actually, with Soleimani, I don't think that was a de-escalation. I don't think the president of the United States can basically drone a general that Congress that we have not declared war on.
That's actually probably a fair point. But I would disagree in this. I'd agree on the congressional part. I disagree on the. I think he has universal
war
powers.
We're not war with Iran. I think that dropping bombs on generals that are actually fighting ISIS in Syria, I think that's a bad idea.
Yeah, they're a little more complicated. Soleimani killed a bunch of Americans. It's a lot more complicated than that.
All right, but here's the thing, though. Was it worth potentially risking a war that would kill more?
It didn't.
But what if it did, though? We don't know.
So it's a hypothetical that resulted in actually de-escalated tensions. But here's what I think I will agree with you on, is that the Ukrainian thing. Let's focus on that, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
What's going on with Ukraine is insane. We should all agree with that. It is wrong to send $75 billion to a proxy war that we might end up having to fight a nuclear-armed power. You agree with that, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And this country, our schools are trash. Our infrastructure is trash. Amen. We're $30 trillion in debt, and we're sending $40 billion overseas. That's insane.
Let me ask you a question, and I agree with you, and we should applaud that. Let me ask you a question, though. Why is it that you have to come to a conservative event to be applauded for that? Where is that on the left right now? I don't see it. Do you?
Not as much as I would like to. I'll admit that to you.
Why do you think that is?
Truthfully, I'm not really sure. I was just bogged down in school, honestly. I changed majors.
Good answer. I mean, honestly, not everyone can follow this stuff as obsessively as I do. Here's the answer I have, though. It's because neoliberalism has taken over the American left. And the only place, I'm going to ask you and think about this for the coming months and years, the only place left for critical, like, discussion on the international American empire, which should not exist, is here on the American right. We won't agree on everything. But I think there's going to be oxygen in the room because the Democrat Party and the American left has unfortunately become just this war clamoring machine. Thanks for being here tonight. Appreciate the honesty. Thank you. All right.
Hello, Charlie. My name is James Friday. First of all, I want to completely second everything my sister just said. That was really good. And then, it's a figure of speech. The black girl that was up here. So I have an advice question and a request. So the first one is, do you have any advice about medical school and law school? Like, I want to do that. And so, like, which one to go to? Because it's really terrible. Like, the University of Michigan.
It's
all
bad out there. Liberty University has a pretty good nursing program.
The DO program, I heard about that.
Yale?
No. The DO program.
Oh, yeah. No, they do. I'm sorry. I thought you said Yale. I misheard. Yes, but Liberty has a better one than most schools, and they're not woke. They're really strong and conservative, and they do a great job. You should give it up. Liberty does a nice job. So, but the list is very, very minimal. Even Baylor has gone totally off the rails, unfortunately.
It's alphabetical order. That was the first one I had for law. So.
But Baylor's not the worst. Okay. Just if you want to go to medical school, don't go to Michigan. I mean, I love our Michigan fans out there. They're great people, but they've gone so off the rails woke, unfortunately. Here's the big thing. Get involved with your Turning Point group. state, get a good church community, get through it as quickly as possible. I think you're going to make a great lawyer or doctor, whatever you end up
doing. Both.
Good for you, man. That's awesome.
And then,
you got an ask really quick. We got to keep going.
Yeah.
We'll take a couple more. But yeah.
Can I be on your show?
Can I be on my show?
Can I be on your show?
Well, you already are because you're here right now.
No, but like podcasts and all that.
Possibly. Okay. We'll talk. All right. Thank you. All right. Couple more.
I'm a student here at UNC Charlotte, and I just had a question. You've claimed to support free speech and right to assembly. Then why was Brandi Love kicked out of a Turning Point USA event in Tampa, Florida in July of 2021?
Right. So Brandi Love is a pornography actress, and we have minors at our event, and I will defend to anybody in any venue or forum not allowing people that spread or participate in pornography to be commingling or socializing around minors.
Well, the clothes that Brandi was wearing and the conversation she was having had nothing to do with her pornography.
Yeah, I don't care. If you participate in pornography, you're not going to be around young children. I'm not going to endorse that as an organizer. I'm not going to act like that's normal and that it's okay. If you engage in something that so many young men struggle with, that are addicted to, that are destroying marriages, I consider you to be a willful participant in a parasitic force in America, and that does not have a place at a Turning Point USA event.
I disagree, but thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for coming on campus.
Appreciate it. All right, the last question.
Good. I'll try to keep it spicy for y'all. Okay. What's up, Charles, man? You're on record for stating, and I quote, "This is the gayest generation of America." What are your overall thoughts on this? Because some of your opponents seem to believe you have homosexual tendencies.
Well, it is the gayest generation ever. Every fact shows that more young people are gay than any other generation. So is there something you'd like to tell me, or do you want to just read off a phone and parrot somebody else's criticism?
I wrote down that question, obviously, because it was a quote. So, I mean, I didn't want to mess it up and then you come for me or anything like that. So like I said, man, what are your overall thoughts on that?
On my thoughts?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my record of my marriage speaks for itself. But is there something you want to tell us about your own?
I mean, you don't gotta accuse me of being gay. Just because you're married don't mean that you're not homosexual yourself.
Well, you came up here asking about the gayest generation. I got some questions about you, man.
You're coming to my campus that I represent, calling us, you know, one of the gayest generations in America.
One out of five young people are lesbian, gay, or trans.
And even though I don't...
It's the gayest generation ever.
Congrats, man.
Congrats? No, it's not a good thing, actually.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, my point is you're coming to our campus, you know, obviously saying that.
And, no, I didn't say it. You repeated it, but I'm happy to defend it.
You did say it. You did quote it.
No, not early in my speech, but I'm happy to repeat it.
Not in your speech, obviously.
It is the gayest generation in American history. That's a fact. Do you disagree with that?
No, I don't disagree with that because I feel like we've been
What's the question here?
My question was just what are your overall thoughts on the quote and, you know.
I defend the quote.
Okay. Cool. Appreciate your time, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Internet's going to love that one. Yeah. You'll be real famous in about 25 minutes, dude. Yeah.
Hey, so I just wanted to, like, I disagree with you on your position on Ukraine. So I believe that we should do everything we can to help Ukraine. Now, you say that we're sending billions of dollars to Ukraine, but actually, that's the valuation of the equipment we're sending to Ukraine. So we're not actually sending money.
Well, right. We've appropriated $75 billion of our budget to buy bullets and weapons and missiles and then send them to Ukraine.
I believe that's the equipment we already have.
No. It's reappropriated dollars that otherwise would be used in other combat theaters or other deployments, other areas that are then being sent. It has to come from somewhere, right? So we already have it. You have to replenish it eventually.
Right.
But let me ask you, how much money would be too much money to spend in Ukraine?
Well, I don't think there's too much money. I mean, Ukraine is fighting for their freedom.
So how about $2 trillion? Is that too much?
Well, right. That's a lot. But I believe the amount we're sending right now is adequate for them to win the war.
Well, why is it our responsibility to help them win a war?
Because Ukraine was unprovoked and they wanted to actually join the European Union.
Okay, so under that, then it's our moral guideline to do that. Why?
Wait, repeat your question.
So, but why is that on the American interest with all the problems we here have domestically? We've been unprovoked. We've had 2 million people cross into our country via an invasion. And yet we're sending arms and missiles and training and equipment and troops and money to a country that most people can't find on a map 5,000 miles away that's not a U.S. state. Why is that our concern?
Well, I believe it is the right thing to do. And the equipment it's not being used.
What does success look like in Ukraine?
All the territories returned to Ukraine.
Then you're prepared for a 50-year war?
I don't believe it'll be a 50-year war.
Does Eastern Ukraine want to be part of Ukraine or Russia?
Well, I believe that Eastern Ukraine, the inhabitants of Eastern Ukraine are originally Russian inhabitants.
They speak Russian and they love Putin. So why should we tell them to go be part of Ukraine when they want to be part of Russia?
Well, why don't they move to Eurasia instead of seceding from Ukraine?
Well, because they like their home, which used to be Russia, which is actually where Russia was founded, and they want to live in Eastern Ukraine and call it Russia. Why are we telling them they have to be part of Ukraine? Who are we to say that? Why is that our concern? And if we get this wrong, we could slip and fall and end in a nuclear war.
Well, we can't capitulate to another power if they're threatening nuclear war. How would you feel if, like, Canada said, oh, we're going to annex
another example. The Canadians would never do that. So use another example.
All right. Well, say China.
Okay,
say
fine.
They would annex Japan, and they said, oh, let us do it or we will nuke you. Is that fair? First of all,
Japan doesn't want to be part of China. 87% of Eastern Ukrainians vote regularly to be part of Russia. This is a very murky situation. Zelensky was not democratically elected. He was displaced in a color revolution by our central intelligence agency. And he's not very well liked in Ukraine. It's 50-50. It's just true. And so, look, is Putin a thug? Of course he is. He shouldn't have invaded Ukraine. Why is that our concern? And let me ask you this. Do you think we have more pressing things happening here domestically that we should probably be focusing on?
Well, I believe we do have I believe we could do both simultaneously.
Are we?
I believe so.
No, I don't think so. Because you say the territorial integrity of Ukraine. What gets me fired up is that our elected representatives are screaming from the rooftops about Ukraine. I don't see them appropriating even $1 billion, $5 billion for a southern border wall, but they're really quick to go make sure Ukraine has their bullets to go fight a war that honestly Russia's going to end up winning.
Well, so you believe we're being like invaded by Mexican immigrants?
By the cartel, yes. 2 million people a year we are being invaded, yes. And they're not immigrants. They're border jumpers, line cutters, and foreign criminals that are coming into our country knowingly breaking our laws.
Well, that's different. They're not coming over here trying to annex our territory. That's what Russia is doing.
Well, many of them are coming with fentanyl, which kills 90,000 people a year. They're sex trafficking young women, anywhere between 20,000 to 30,000 people a year. They're bringing guns. They come here illegally. That's an invasion. And that sounds like an annexation of a country. The point is that Ukraine might be the most noble effort ever. It isn't. I'm just going to be honest. You'll learn that over time. You'll see. They're an unbelievably corrupt government. They're backwards. They're money launderers. They're criminals. And they should have to fend for themselves. Ukraine should not be part of NATO. They're not a NATO country. They shouldn't be. And to put us in that will make every single one of your lives be put in jeopardy to go fight a war that we should not fight. This is what it is that Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, and Lockheed Martin, the war industry and the defense contractors, are using this entire thing as a way to get us dangerously close to another proxy war. While we care about a far distant conflict that looks nice on cable television, while our wages go down, our kids are the most suicidal, depressed, alcohol addicted, drug addicted, psychiatric addicted, least educated, least socialized, least married, and least likely to have children generation history, but I have to be lectured by my leaders that I have to go send money to Ukraine. Why does that make sense?
Like I said, we can do both. I believe we can do both.
But we aren't, and that's the point. Our leaders better start looking inwardly and not distantly and foreignly. That's what pays the bills. I get that. There's a lot of money laundered through there. But guess what? We're the ones that eventually they have to answer to. Ukraine is a lost cause. It's not worth our time, our energy, our attention. The people of Ukraine are the true victims. I wish them the best. I want our leaders to put us first and not the people or the regime of Ukraine. Thank you for being here. Okay. That was fun tonight, wasn't it, guys? Thank you, guys. Our Turning Point USA chapter, you guys did so incredible. Thank you to our donors. If you're watching online, you want to give a $5, $10, $15, $20 contribution, tpusa.com. You guys can check it out. Stay engaged, stay involved. Make sure you are registered to vote and make sure you do vote. If you're not yet subscribed to our podcast, please make sure you do that. Charlie Kirk Show podcast. We deeply appreciate it. There's a lot of exciting things happening. We have America Fest in Phoenix, Arizona. Frank is going to be speaking there December 17, 18, 19, 20. 10,000 people from across the country. Tucker Carlson will be there. Tim Pool will be there. Candace Owens will be there. And many others. AMFest.com. That is AMFest. AMFest.com. For these guys online or here in person, you want to check it out. Stay engaged. Stay involved. Stay educated. God bless you guys. And thanks for a great evening. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.